If you don't know me already, my name is Kyla Ruff, and I'm one of the co-directors of For a New Earth, along with Sean McGraw and Barry Stevenson. We're very happy to welcome you to this non-conventional venue for what is going to be, I think, a very interesting evening. So first we're going to tell you a bit about For a New Earth, our not-for-profit organization that's running this, and then we'll welcome our two very special guests to the stage. So first I'd like to introduce Dr. Sean McGraw, who, as I said, is also a co-director of For a New Earth and is the head of the Department of Philosophy.
Well, good evening, everyone. Thanks for coming out. As I was walking up the hill, I thought, well, I wonder how many people would be there. And I realized, it doesn't matter if it's 5 or 50. If it's 500, it could be a problem. This is perfect. So thank you for coming out. It's really great to have you here. We have, I think, the most informed man of Muskrat Falls in the province here tonight to talk to you about what you don't know about Muskrat Falls, which is a lot, by the way. I mean, I'm presuming you're like me. I went up to Labrador last week with my colleagues, Kyla and Barry. I'd written a letter or two to the Telegram and the op-ed and so on. And everything I know about Muskrat Falls, I learned in the last week up there. It's an incredible story, and it's a story our democracy needs to hear. So I'm so glad that you're here to hear it. I just want to say in a couple minutes something about our nonprofit organization, For a New Earth. We've been around for 2.5 years, but we started as a research project. That means it was university bound and bound up with university projects. And we have since stepped into the public sphere and now have status as a nonprofit organization. And we have as our aim the somewhat ambitious goal of raising ecological consciousness in Newfoundland and Labrador. Raising ecological consciousness in Newfoundland and Labrador. I want to say something about why that's our goal. First of all, because we think it's lacking. That is, Newfoundland and Labrador does not have enough ecological consciousness. Secondly, we think said consciousness is nonpartisan. It's not left, it's not right, it's not conservative, not liberal, not NDP, not Green Party. And thirdly, we think it is necessary for all who live on this planet. Why would I dare say that it's lacking? Well, do I need to say it? From the cod moratorium to the development of the offshore to Muskrat Falls, Newfoundland and Labrador is a province of heedless resource extraction. Deluded by a sense of limitless resources, we routinely exempt ourselves from the self-constraint and the environmental stewardship that are now becoming normal dimensions of modern life. Even when the limits of our resources bite back. And by the way, with the moratorium, the news was at the time, way back in the early 90s, that this is the first collapse of a major ecological resource. Even when it bites back right here, we push headlong. The world wants oil, says Premier Ball. And so, pump we will. Newfoundland and Labrador needs energy and an economic edge, not to mention political vengeance. So we built a dam 4 times bigger than it needed to be on a beautiful river, forever altering an irreplaceable ecosystem. When will we wake up and realize that we're citizens of a planet, not just a province? And that, entrusted as we are with an extraordinary fertile land and seascape, we have a responsibility to those living who have nothing like it, to boast of, and to those to come, to our children and our children's children. So, secondly, we're nonpartisan. That is, this is no longer environmentalism. This is not your parents' environmentalism. This is something different. This is ecology for the planet. We need everyone on board. We need the left's sense of social justice and progress. We need the right's sense of realism and fidelity to the best of the past. We need state regulations of industry, and we also need good local incentives. This is not party politics. This is the wake-up call for the planet. This is an opportunity for our civilization, and everyone needs to buy in. For a New Earth, therefore, is not aligning itself with any particular politics, and therefore is free to align itself with all particular politics insofar as they are ecological. Third, we're getting behind ecological consciousness because we think it's necessary for everyone. If the climatologists are to be believed, if they are not lying, and by the way, this isn't an exaggeration, climatology is the biggest effort in collaborative international science in the history of civilization. And if that largest collaborative effort in science is to be believed, the 3 degrees of warming that we are heading towards, almost certainly, is going to be bad for us all, and bad for us here. I could say we could look at the winter. It's a very weird winter. Maybe that's too anecdotal. We could certainly talk about the possibility of a Newfoundland without fish, because the acidification of the sea is going to make it thus. So for these reasons, we think that the world, and the province in particular, needs environmental leaders, countries like Iceland and Norway, that show us that it's possible to be industrious, democratic, and wealthy, and ecological. And if I still haven't convinced you, look at this. What have we got to lose? What else is there for us here in Newfoundland? Economic victimhood, been there, done that. The departure of all the young people, most assuredly. The demise of the rural, a few perhaps high-paid oil executives for the last golden days of the oil industry. There's nothing for us to lose, and there's everything for us to gain. So for this reason, we have founded For a New Earth, an environmental advocacy group for Newfoundland about Labrador. And among the many things that we're deeply interested in is information. That is, a democracy is only as good as its information flow. You know, if we don't know what we're talking about, as I didn't last week until last week regarding Muskrat Falls, how are we supposed to decide? Literacy, the second point. If we can't interpret the information, if we don't have good science, good theory, helping us to understand the glut of information, how are we to decide? And thirdly, and last, and not least, is conversion. That is, we've all got to change. Everyone. That's my conviction. So that's what I've got to say. I'm going to pass it off to my colleague, Barry Stevenson, to bring me down to earth, perhaps. Thanks very much.
Hi, thanks everyone for coming out. So one of the really disheartening facts about Muskrat Falls, and I mean no disrespect to anybody who's living in Labrador and dealing with the hard realities of it, but one of the really disheartening facts is that the story of Muskrat Falls is, when you start looking, utterly routine. This is not a unique kind of story. So beginning in the 1950s, there were many dams built around the world. Today, there are about 75 dams producing over 2,000 megawatts. About another 20 are currently being produced that'll produce over 2,000 megawatts. And when you start looking at the stories of these dams, you realize that Muskrat Falls really does, in many ways, follow a very common, consistent plot line. It goes something like this. Impenetrable, unaccountable, highly bureaucratic state and corporate entities tout the various benefits of hydroelectric dams, a mix of economic development and forms of state nationalism and identity politics. So the idea is invented. Then mechanisms kick in to assess, regulatory mechanisms, environmental assessments, financial assessments. These kick in. Usually they have, cautionary warnings. These are invariably ignored. Once the project starts, it's pretty much impossible to stop it. Financing is run through large international banking instruments, such as the World Bank, which can basically guarantee payments on loans because its member states can tax their populations in order to get the money. The costs invariably escalate. Revenue projections are revised down. It becomes clear that it's not economically viable, leaving basically taxes, ratepayers, to foot the bill. Meanwhile, people are displaced from their homes. There are many health risks, environmental risks, loss of biodiversity, river ecosystems are damaged. There are differential benefits gained between people that live in urban centers in the regions these are built and people living more closely in rural centers where the dams are built. As it turns out, even dams are not so clean. They produce significant amounts of greenhouse gas emissions. So everything that I've been reading about the history of dams in the last 50 or 60 years, Muskrat Falls in many ways fits this all too common story, and that is quite disheartening, because it means that we knew. I mean, the information was out there to know how this was probably going to play out, and nevertheless, it went ahead and has played out in precisely the way the story plays out. So we really need, I think, to find ways to strengthen civil society. I think I would certainly say this of myself, need to be more responsible, need to be more attuned to what's going on politically. And I think in many respects, you know, we all have to own some responsibility for this. It's easy to shift the blame on others, and I'm not suggesting that people weren't out there, you know, arguing against it. But I think our civil society has been so decimated that we lack the kinds of instruments we need to get information, to mobilize people. And so this is one of the things that FAME is trying to do, along with many other organizations, you know, in the province, in Canada, and around the globe, and we're going to keep trying to do it. The one thing that has really kind of bothered me about this is, I think this idea that, you know, costs were underestimated, revenues were overestimated, this is so utterly simplistic an analysis. It sounds like, you know, you've, I don't know, misplaced your grocery list or something like that. There has to be deeper mechanisms, deeper context informing this, and I really do think there are. And it's become increasingly clear to me, I think, that the resource that's actually really being exploited here is not hydropower, but people, because people suffer the impacts of the dam, and people are left to pay the bills for it. So I really think, I believe someone here in the room tonight used the language of Ponzi scheme to talk about this dam, and I think we need to start thinking somewhere along these lines, because it's ratepayers that are being asked to foot the bill for this. And that, I think, is wrong. Since I'm in religious studies, I'm a professor at Munn, I thought I would dig into some C.S. Lewis. So this is a passage from a short quote from C.S. Lewis, his book, The Abolition of Man, from 1943. C.S. Lewis wrote, "What we call man's power over nature turns out to be a power exercised by some men over other men with nature as its instrument." But I think it's a very, very apt kind of statement about what's going on with resource development around the world, and Muskrat Falls in particular. Thanks.
I'm just going to say a quick word about what we actually did last week and kind of brief a lot of you who I'm assuming couldn't be there for geographical reasons on what happened. I think I might have to like hold this like a rock. Okay. This is what I actually wanted to do. So as you know, on the 21st and the 22nd, as Sean mentioned, the three of us went to the Goose Bay area and went with Dave Vardy and Jim Learning was there and many others. We mean it when we say that this was a really life-changing event for us. And I think that when you speak about Muskrat Falls and St. John's, if you don't have the experience of going to the place where all of this is actually happening, you can't understand the pain, the material effects, the culture, the difficult plurality of voices, and the complexity of the situation. So we are really grateful to have had that opportunity, and I want to just share a bit about that event with you. You know, one of the goals of For a New Earth from the beginning has been to bridge together academic voices with voices from the community, with people from industry and people with experience in government and politics to really get a full picture on what is actually occurring, for example, in Muskrat Falls, but also in other democratic failures in the province to deal sufficiently with ecological issues, such as Sean mentioned, Premier Ball's announcement that we're going to double oil production by 2030, as if we have not already had our bouts with oil production and the misestimation of the prices of oil. So these are the type of issues that For a New Earth wants to engage with, and we want to engage with it in a fashion that it's not just coming out of the university, nor is it just coming out of the voices of those in positions of power and not in Crown corporations and in the government, nor is it just happening, you know, at the bar at the Peter Easton pub. We're somehow gathering everybody together in the best way we can to really have this discussion. All of that is to say that on the first day of the event, we had four kind of academic formal talks from Dave Vardy, Kelly Vauden, Steve Crawford, who's also here, and Marina Biasudi-Brown, who is the research head of the Independent Expert Advisory Committee. And these talks kind of kicked off the event in a really kind of informed way that gave people, including us, I think, the vocabulary and the information necessary to proceed with this event in an informed and rigorous and focused way. So, I mean, Dave spoke about how Muskrat Falls is a threat to our economic and political sovereignty and democracy. You might hear a bit about that again tonight. And how the project was a public policy error. Of course, Dave is very critical of the fact that Muskrat Falls was exempt from the conditions of the Public Utilities Board and that the Joint Environmental Panel on Nalcor's assessments was ignored. Also, issues came up throughout the event surrounding, of course, the North Spur, and this was a point of discussion. And honestly, Dave, your presentation was a real point of learning for a lot of us. I think it really gave us the information we needed to proceed through these days in an informed way. Dr. Vaden also spoke in a very kind of new fashion for us about some of the community impacts of Muskrat Falls in the Goose Bay area, particularly focused. She had a whole research team working on this. On the impacts of mobile work and how this affected their region in a variety of ways, some of which you can't even think of or that you don't, you know, it didn't occur to me talking about this in St. John's, how, for example, housing, the treatment of women, public health changed with the influx of mobile workers in Muskrat Falls. Then Dr. Crocker, who is here, spoke about the how Muskrat Falls shows our dependency on volatile market source forces and was really critical about how business and investors are the first protected from the contingencies that they exploit. And of course, Dr. Crocker criticized the reconfiguration of the state as a business, which is something definitely to think about when a crown corporation like Nalcor has the power and has done the things that it has done. As stated, Biasuti Browns, the fourth academic presentation of that day, presented the research of this advisory committee, which really has the goal to execute a mitigation, moderation, and management of methylmercury in Muskrat Falls, and will report back with public information. So I don't have time here, and I'm sure a lot of you know, to explain the issue surrounding methylmercury, but it's an extreme public health concern, and people are dealing in Labrador with the reality every day that their subsistence practices and their ways of life and their culture could disappear forever because of this project. And Stan Marshall, standing on the stage in the INCO Innovation Center, saying, nobody's gonna die, and I know it. I will be openly critical of that after having been there and seeing how people actually feel about this and the imminent threat to them that the whole project poses. So this is part of what we were discussing and why we're so thankful that Marita Biasuti Brown actually gave that presentation and has assembled an advisory committee on that issue. Then there was a Q&A, followed by a keynote presentation by Jerry Bannister, who's an associate professor of history at the Dalhousie University. His talk was The Battle Never Ends, Politics, Culture, and Muskrat Falls. If you're interested at all in the political culture of Newfoundland and Labrador, you gotta read some of the work by Jerry Bannister. The guy has an incredible thesis that is really dear to my heart about how the narrative in Newfoundland and Labrador, right from Joey Smallwood up to this point, has been one that we would describe in philosophy as teleological, or one that is in view of final goals that will deliver us from all of the struggles that we've had in this province. This uphill battle where we have a culture of collective struggle that eventually culminates in a project such as Muskrat Falls, which is going to save us. And he's very, very critical of this narrative, how it is embedded in a history of Newfoundland nationalism, its relationship to Upper Churchill, 1969, cycles of grievances, cycles of memory. And you know, he's bold. As a philosopher, we like him a lot. He's using terms like political mythologies to talk about what Muskrat Falls was for the people of this province and how it was a myth that was supposed to create employment and generate progress. Indeed, if you look at the statements from 2010 from Danny Williams and others, that is the narrative. This is going to be our wealth generator. This is going to be our saving grace. So, you know, if you missed the talk, it's actually, the podcast is online. Barry recorded it. You can go to the For New Earth website and hear it. And the thesis, in my opinion, is extremely powerful. So that was kind of our, you know, academic-y, informative sort of day. And then the second day was a World Cafe style. It's the first time I ever did that. I don't know if any of you have done it, but basically there were seven tables set up with two, presenters, introducing sort of figures at each table, again, from a variety of backgrounds. So we had people who were protesters and Labrador land protectors, and we had a guy doing a PhD on Gull Island there. We had another researcher doing development studies in Muskrat Falls, and it was really a wonderful experience because all of the people, we were all split up, assigned to the seven tables, and we moved around and got to hear these introductions and these presentations and actually participate in the discussion. And you know, I admit, like, these things can be a bit hit or miss, right? Because you don't know whether or not It's going to be smooth and informative and organized, but I'm happy to report that it was a real learning experience for a lot of us, and I think it hit exactly what For a New Earth is trying to do, that is this balance between the academic voices, the researchers, the community members. We had an expert there talking about the mental health impacts of Muskrat Falls. We had Mud Lake residents who are 100% convinced that Mud Lake, the flooding of Mud Lake, was the result of Muskrat Falls. And hearing these people speak about how their concerns were ignored by people who did the assessments there is really powerful, and it's something I learned a lot from. Incidentally, you can see their videos online. Actually, they have 12 of the Mud Lake residents, the Labrador Land Protectors, put them on YouTube, speaking about what they went through. And again, if you couldn't be there and you want to hear what those people went through. Then that's about the end. I mean, we closed out the day with two people from Site C in British Columbia, where they have a similar story as to what happened in Muskrat Falls. I'm kind of dovetailing on what Barry said about this not being totally unique. There were other hydroelectric projects that had similar social and economic impacts in Canada, and we learned a lot from them, and they discussed their sort of conflicts there surrounding First Nations rights and also the economic cost of the project in the end. So that's basically what we went through. I hope that I've done a good job at letting you know why you should check out the podcasts online, hear those Mud Lake stories, and we hope that you'll join us at future events, and thank you very much for being here.